You know how it is, when you walk into a security operations center and like every single red light on the dashboard is just blinking at once.
Oh, yeah. It's the ultimate alarm fatigue.
Exactly. You're staring at this massive wall of alerts, and the hardest part isn't finding a threat.
It's figuring out which blinking light is an actual missile headed for your network.
Right. And which one is just, a glitch in the radar.
Because when everything on the monitor is labeled a critical emergency, well, I mean, nothing actually is.
That is so true. The noise floor in modern cybersecurity is just incredibly high right now.
It really is. And it forces defending teams to waste precious hours triaging hype instead of hunting real adversaries.
And filtering out that noise is exactly why we are here. So welcome to today's deep dive.
Glad to be here.
We are adopting the Cyber Mornings daily briefing format today because we know your time is valuable.
Extremely valuable.
Whether you're actively defending an enterprise network or you just want a clearer understanding of the reality on the modern digital battlefield, you need the actual signal separated from the static.
You really do.
So our mission today is pretty straightforward. We are unpacking the three most critical cybersecurity stories of the day, looking at how threat actors are evolving, and breaking down the practical impact for you on the ground.
It's a fascinating lineup today, too. It really highlights the massive spectrum of what network defenders are up against right now.
Oh, for sure. We're going from chaotic data extortion to hyper-organized ransomware cartels.
So, like, hyped up vulnerabilities that completely fall apart under scrutiny.
Yes. So we're going to start by looking at the Shiny Hunters extortion crew. They have seriously leveled up their tactics with a massive Oracle PeopleSoft zero day.
That's a big one.
It is. Then we'll crack open the inner workings of the Genelon. This is a ransomware cartel operating with the ruthless efficiency and the massive ego of a Silicon Valley tech startup.
Yeah, that story is just wild.
And finally, we will look at a newly hyped Windows BitLocker bypass called Great XML that, well, spoiler alert, might be a lot more smoke than actual fire.
Let's get right into that first story. So Google's Mandiant has been tracking a flurry of activity under the name UNC6240.
Which is the Shiny Hunters crew.
Exactly. And between May 27th and June 9th, this group heavily exploited a remote code execution zero day in Oracle PeopleSoft.
We're talking about a severe vulnerability here. CVE-2026-35273. It comes with a 9.8 out of 10 severity rating.
Yeah, 9.8 is basically as bad as it gets.
I mean, I'm looking at that score, and a 9.8 without any required authentication basically means an attacker can just walk right through the front door of the server.
There is zero friction.
Literally zero.
And that lack of friction is the terrifying part. If your organization has the PeopleSoft Environment Management Hub,
The PSEM.
right, PCM Hub, if that's reachable from the outside over HTTP, an attacker can simply send a crafted request and take over the server. Yeah, it completely bypasses all access controls to give them an immediate, unauthenticated path to total system compromise.
And Shiny Hunters, they did not hesitate to weaponize that access. This campaign hit universities incredibly hard.
You really did.
The University of Nottingham was one of the first confirmed victims, and the fallout is just staggering. We're talking about 455,000 unique email addresses exposed.
That's massive.
And it covers both current students and alumni. But it isn't just emails, The leaked data includes physical addresses, phone numbers, passport numbers.
And highly sensitive, heavily regulated details regarding ethnicity and disabilities.
Right. It's an absolute gold mine for extortion.
Well, higher education is a prime target for data extortion for exactly that reason. These universities are essentially operating like small cities.
Oh, absolutely.
They hold vast amounts of incredibly sensitive data, and often their legacy infrastructure is just sprawling.
Yeah, keeping something as massive as an ERP system perfectly secure and entirely patched across a decentralized university network is, I mean, it's a logistical nightmare.
It really is. But this is where the story takes a bizarre turn.
Yeah, the operational security, right.
Oh my gosh, yes. For a group executing a sophisticated zero-day attack against enterprise software, their operational security was shockingly bad.
It's like a master cat burglar,
Yeah.
picking an impossible state-of-the-art vault lock, but then like leaving their blueprints and an ID badge sitting on the front porch for the police to find.
That is the perfect analogy. They left the door wide open behind them, and it gave researchers a massive window into how they operate.
A researcher actually publicly flagged their open directories, didn't they?
Yeah. Mandiant found 5 sequential IP addresses running Python's simple HTTP server on port 8888.
Oh, come on. Simple HTTP.
I know, right? And if you know anything about simple HTTP, you know it is just about the worst possible way to host files if you want to stay hidden.
It's a massive unforced error. Python's simple HTTP server doesn't have any authentication or security built in by default.
None at all. It just blindly serves up a directory listing of whatever folder it's running in to anyone with a web browser who hits that IP address and port.
Which means they just left all their staging files, their tools, their scripts completely exposed for anyone on the internet to click through and download.
It's just wild. We could literally see a shared bash history, their lateral movement scripts, and custom Mesh Central remote management agents.
And they'd even disguise those agents to look like Microsoft Azure binaries, right?
Yeah. And they set up their command and control server at a domain called azureintfiles.net to try and blend in with legitimate enterprise network traffic.
So they put all this effort into blending in, but then just leave the simple HTTP server wide open.
Exactly. But looking through those exposed files is a masterclass in their post-exploitation playbook.
Oh, tell me about the script they found.
Right. They used a script literally named victim_fanout.fish.
I love how on-the-nose malware naming conventions can be.
It's very literal. But the mechanism here is brutal in its simplicity. What this script does is pull a list of internal hosts from the compromised server's hosts file.
Okay, so it builds a target list.
Yep. Then it attempts to spread laterally to every other machine on that list over SSH by blindly spraying a hard-coded list of usernames and passwords.
Wow, just spray and pray. And if they successfully get in, they drop a marker file with the most stereotypical hacker name imaginable.
Oh yeah, read me if you see this, you've been hacked.txt.
So dramatic. We also saw in their command history that they were compressing the stolen data using a tool called Zisking.
Yeah, Z standard.
I imagine they are using that specifically for the compression ratio and speed, right?
Okay.
Like to package massive amounts of university data and blast it outbound over SSH straight to their public leak site.
Before the network monitors catch the massive spike in outbound traffic, exactly, speed is essential for extortion groups.
So even though their OPSEC was sloppy, their actual execution was fast.
Highly automated and devastatingly fast. Getting in, finding the data, compressing it, exfiltrating it, they had that down to a science.
I'm looking at this timeline, and it feels like a massive leap for them.
Yeah.
I mean, Shiny Hunters historically relied on things like voice phishing or stealing session tokens to bypass weak access controls on SaaS platforms like Salesforce or Canvas.
Right, much softer targets.
Yeah. So pivoting from opportunistic phishing to deploying a server-side zero-day against on-prem ERP software, it feels like they just jumped into a completely different weight class.
It absolutely is a different weight class, and that is why this matters conceptually. ERP systems like PeopleSoft are the absolute crown jewels of an organization.
They hold the financial data, the HR records, the proprietary IP.
Exactly. To go after that layer requires a level of capability we haven't seen from them before.
So what's the big question here?
The open question the industry is grappling with now is, did they just buy or borrow this zero-day for a one-off campaign, or is Shiny Hunters transitioning into a heavy-hitting, dedicated ERP exploitation crew?
Well, if you're listening to this right now and you are managing a PeopleSoft environment, you can't really wait around for the industry to answer that question.
No, you need actionable mitigation today.
So what's the immediate takeaway?
The immediate takeaway is locking down that environment management hub. If you are on a multi-server setup, you need to disable the service entirely.
And if it's a single server?
If you are on a single server setup, remove the PSE Hub application.
But let's be real, you know, sometimes shutting off a core application will absolutely break a team's workflow, and you just can't get the approval to do it instantly.
That happens a lot.
What is the immediate fallback if you simply cannot disable it today?
Then you must aggressively block external access at the perimeter. Specifically, block external web access to the PSE Hub and the HTTP listening connector endpoints.
Can't you just use a WA for that?
Actually, no. Mandiant specifically warned that just relying on web application firewall body inspection rules is not enough to stop this because attackers have found ways to bypass those specific filters. You have to block the endpoints themselves.
Got it. And to check if they were already inside, you should be checking your WebLogic access logs for external POST requests to those endpoints.
Yes. you're looking for any unexpected .jsp files under your web application directories or weirdly named folders like Scratchpad or persistent storage.
And didn't they also mess with the XML files?
They did. You need to look for recent changes to .xml files in your environment metadata. Attackers are abusing that for XML decoder persistence.
Let's unpack that for a second, because persistence is key. How does that XML decoder mechanism actually keep them in the network?
Well, PeopleSoft uses Java. When the server restarts, it reads those XML configuration files to low its settings.
Okay.
Attackers inject malicious, serialized Java objects into those XML files.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. When the system's XML decoder parses the file during boot up, it inadvertently executes the attacker's code.
Wow. So it essentially means the malware seamlessly reinfects the system every single time the server restarts, without needing the attacker to even trigger it.
Exactly. It's incredibly stealthy.
That level of operational slop from Shiny Hunters, like the Open Simple HTTP server mixed with that advanced XML persistence, really highlights a massive divide in the cybercriminal underground right now.
It's a huge contrast.
You have chaotic groups leaving doors open on the internet, and then on the complete opposite end of the spectrum, you have groups maturing their business models and operating with the terrifying efficiency of a Silicon Valley startup.
Which brings us perfectly to the drama of our second story.
Yes. We are talking about a ransomware cartel called The Gentlemen.
Formerly known as Phantom Mantis, or ArmCorp.
Right. And they are prolific. They have already claimed 478 victims, hitting organizations hard in Thailand, the UK, Brazil, Germany, and India.
They're moving fast.
But to really understand the threat they pose, we have to look at their origin story, because it honestly sounds like a corporate espionage thriller.
It really does. So the group is led by a Russian-speaking cybercriminal who goes by the alias LRVA368.
And Brian Krebs did some digging on him.
He did. Cybersecurity journalist Brian Krebs recently identified him as a 36-year-old man from Russia. Now, LRVA368 didn't start at the top. He used to be an affiliate, basically a foot soldier for other major ransomware cartels, specifically Embargo and Quellen.
But then a massive payment dispute tore the relationship apart.
A very public dispute.
Yeah, LRVA 368 publicly claimed that the operators of the Quellen ransomware pulled an exit scam on him, defrauding him out of $48,000 he had earned from a breach.
And he was furious.
Oh, I bet. So he essentially took his ball and went home to build a better ball. He launched his own competing ransomware as a service operation, rebranding it as The Gentlemen.
And they aggressively mirror legitimate corporate structures. I mean, they even paid for premium sponsored accounts on underground hacker forums to boost their marketing visibility and edge out Quillen.
Talk about spite.
Exactly. And to attract top-tier criminal talent away from their rivals, their profit-sharing model is incredibly aggressive. They offer affiliates a massive 90% cut of the ransom, keeping only 10% for the core developers.
Wow. Wait, hold on, though. I've got to push back on this startup culture narrative a bit.
Okay, why is that?
Because some of their requirements sound like a massive marketing gimmick to create a false sense of exclusivity. Like, they require potential affiliates to provide 1 gigabyte of exfiltrated data from a victim just to apply for access to their affiliate panel.
Right, the 1GB rule.
Yeah. Is their tech actually good enough to justify that kind of arrogance, or are they just really great at PR?
It's a fair question, but that 1 gigabyte requirement isn't just hazing or marketing. It's actually a highly practical security mechanism.
Really? How so?
They demand that data upfront to prove you are a seasoned, active criminal and not a law enforcement officer or a security researcher trying to infiltrate their infrastructure.
Oh.
Think about it. A cop won't hand over a gigabyte of freshly stolen corporate data just to get a login credential.
So it's basically a dark web background check. That's bleak.
Very bleak. And we know their underlying technology matches their arrogance because of 2 major leaks.
Right. They got exposed.
Yeah. First, a researcher discovered an open directory on a Russian bulletproof host called Proton 66 that contained their entire operator toolkit.
And the chat logs.
Yes. Second, an internal rocket. Chat database leaked, exposing over 3,300 messages between the core developers and their affiliates.
And those leaks gave us a terrifying look under the hood. Their encryption isn't just standard off-the-shelf stuff, right?
Not at all.
They use a hybrid cryptographic scheme combining XT55 mining key exchange with XChat20 symmetric encryption. That is a mouthful.
It is, but let's break down why that specific combination is so lethal. Mm-hmm. So XChat20 is a stream cipher that is incredibly fast.
And speed is everything.
Exactly. That raw speed matters immensely because it allows the ransomware to encrypt massive, sprawling file servers in minutes, often before behavioral detection tools even realize a mass encryption event is happening.
Wow. And the X25519 part?
The X25519 asymmetric key exchange means the attackers can securely establish the encryption keys on the victim's machine without ever sending the private keys over the network.
So network defenders can't intercept them.
Precisely, making it impossible to intercept the keys and decrypt the files.
They are optimizing for maximum damage in minimum time. And Microsoft, who tracks this cluster as Storm Tawdy 697, they highlighted a specific command line feature in the malware that just sounds like an absolute nightmare.
Oh, the spread argument. The malware is written in Go, and if the attacker runs it with a dash dash spread argument, it completely transforms.
It stops being just a standard file encryptor, right?
Right. It stops just targeting the local machine and becomes a self-propagating worm. It will actively seek out and attempt to deploy itself to every reachable system on the network automatically.
So it shifts the paradigm from a single compromised server to an entire subnet going dark simultaneously.
It's devastating.
And if they add a dash dash wipe argument, it performs a post-encryption routine that securely deletes recoverable artifacts from the hard drive, basically scorching the earth so forensics teams can't piece together what happened.
And if that wasn't enough, they are also providing their affiliates with EDR killers.
Endpoint detection and response killers.
Exactly. These use bring your own vulnerable driver or BYOVD techniques to help bypass endpoint security.
I always find BYOVD fascinating because it uses the system's own trust against it.
It's a very clever technique.
Like, instead of trying to write a brand new sneaky piece of malware that antivirus might flag, the attackers just drop an incredibly old, perfectly legitimate, but highly vulnerable hardware driver onto the system. And because it has a valid cryptographic signature from a real vendor, Windows just trusts it and loads it right into the kernel.
And once that trusted driver is in the kernel, the attackers exploit the known vulnerabilities in that specific driver to gain kernel-level privileges.
And from there, they own the system.
Yep. From there, they can just silently murder the endpoint detection and response software from the inside, completely blinding the defenders.
And their support system is built to help affiliates use these tools. I mean, they have dedicated chat support using secure messaging apps like Talks and SimpleX Chat to help affiliates troubleshoot intrusions in real time.
The most fascinating and honestly alarming part is their agility.
Yeah, the patching.
Yes. When a decryptor for an early version of their ransomware was released by security researchers back in April, the gentleman released a patched, updated version of their malware on the exact same day.
A same-day patch cycle. That is faster than most legitimate enterprise software company.
It really is.
So, for the listener defending a network right now, what is the practical defense strategy against a cartel that is this well-resourced and organized?
You have to focus entirely on your perimeter edge and your internal segmentation.
Okay.
Their initial access almost always comes through edge devices, VPN appliances, firewalls, specifically targeting platforms like Cisco, Fortinet, and VMware infrastructure.
Because those are usually exposed.
Right. They actively track modern vulnerabilities in those systems and build exploits into their pipeline immediately.
So the key metric for defenders here is dwell time.
Exactly. Once they breach that edge device, they typically spend 2 to 6 weeks inside the network.
That's a decent amount of time.
It is. They use that time to perform Active Directory discovery, escalate their privileges, and quietly exfiltrate that massive amount of data before they finally trigger the encryption worm.
So that 2 to 6 weeks is your window to catch them. And if you are relying on a flat network architecture, that spread argument is going to be a death sentence. You must have rigorous internal network segmentation to contain the blast radius if they do breach that edge device.
Completely agree.
Seeing a criminal group spend immense resources quietly building reliable enterprise-grade tools, it provides a really stark contrast to our final story.
It's night and day.
Because while cartels are building highly effective worms, the cybersecurity world is also constantly flooded with individual researchers loudly dropping chaotic, accidental exploits that defenders still have to waste time triaging.
Which is exactly what happened with the great XML BitLocker bypass debate.
Yeah, so a security researcher who goes by the name Chaotic Eclipse recently published a new Windows BitLocker bypass that they named Great XML.
Catchy name.
Right. This is the same researcher who recently dropped a Microsoft Defender Zero Day called Rogue Planet. Chaotic Eclipse claims they discovered this great XML bypass accidentally in just 4 hours of tinkering.
And the mechanism they described certainly caught the entire community's attention because, well, it attacks full disk encryption.
And the claim sounds incredibly simple. They said that if you copy a specific XML file on a 10.xml and a recovery folder containing reagent.xml directly to the root of the Windows recovery partition,
okay,
and then you reboot the machine into the Windows recovery environment by holding shift and clicking restart, you suddenly get an unrestricted command shell with full access to the BitLocker encrypted volume.
Wow. If that were true, as stated, it would be a catastrophic failure of Windows security.
Absolutely catastrophic.
It would mean anyone with physical access to a stolen corporate laptop could bypass BitLocker in a matter of minutes just by moving a couple of files around.
But let's do a reality check here. When you actually dig into the technical requirements, the security community immediately started pushing back, didn't they?
They pushed back very strongly. Renowned security researcher Will Dorman tested the exploit and publicly called the reproduction steps flawed.
Flawed how?
This is where we have to look closely at the prerequisites for the exploit and explain why the mechanism doesn't match the hype.
You always have to read the fine print in vulnerability reports.
Always.
Because Chaotic Eclipse noted in their write-up that for this XML trick to work, the system needs to be in a very specific state. A Microsoft Defender offline scan has to have already been initiated.
And that detail changes everything.
Why is that?
Because to trigger a Microsoft Defender offline scan, a user typically has to already be logged into Windows.
Oh.
Furthermore, they have to possess local administrator credentials to even initiate that scan in the first place.
Wait, let me get this straight. To bypass the BitLocker security that prevents you from accessing the system, you already need to be logged in with full administrator access to the system.
Precisely. As Dorman noted, if you already have local admin credentials and you are actively logged into Windows, it is trivial to just open the control panel and turn BitLocker off entirely.
Yeah, you just click decrypt.
Exactly. You don't need a convoluted multi-step XML exploit in the recovery partition to access the files because you already own the machine.
That's hilarious. It's like bragging that you found a brilliant, undetectable way to hotwire a high-end sports car.
Yeah.
But step one of your exploit requires you to already have the owner's keys sitting in the ignition.
That is the perfect way to look at it. Chaotic Eclipse even admitted in the deeper documentation that if the offline scan wasn't already initiated, the attacker would have to log in and initiate it themselves.
All right.
Or somehow figure out a theoretical way to force the machine into that state without logging, in which they haven't proven is actually possible yet.
So if you are a defender and you see a headline screaming, "New BitLocker bypass discovered," your heart naturally drops.
Of course it does.
But what is the practical takeaway here?
The takeaway is, do not panic over every flashy vulnerability name that trends on social media.
Good advice.
Assessing the actual prerequisites of an exploit is just as important as understanding the exploit itself. If a vulnerability requires local administrator privileges to execute, it shifts from being a critical, hair-on-fire threat to just another local privilege escalation or persistence mechanism.
It's the difference between a burglar who can pick your front door lock from the street versus a burglar who already lives in your guest bedroom figuring out how to pick the lock on your hall closet.
Exact.
Both are bad scenarios, obviously, but one is a much more immediate critical threat to your perimeter security.
You have to prioritize what actually needs patching based on realistic threat models, not just whoever shouts the loudest on the internet.
Okay. Let's pull all of this together. We started today talking about the noise on the SOC radar, trying to find the real threats. And looking across these three stories, the thematic through line is incredible.
It really paints a picture of the current landscape.
It does. We're watching threat actors mature and segment in real time. Shiny Hunters is moving from simple SaaS token theft to deploying severe, unauthenticated 0 days against on-premises ERP systems.
Using things like XML Decoder to maintain a quiet, persistent grip on university networks.
Right. They are targeting the deepest, most sensitive data reserves available.
And then you have cartels like The Gentlemen.
Organizing into sophisticated corporate structures with 90-10 profit shares, dedicated chat support for affiliates, and deploying hyperfast XChatch 20 encryption paired with self-propagating worms.
Very sophisticated.
And while all of this high-level organized crime is happening, defending teams still have to waste time sifting through the noise of overhyped, highly conditional local exploits like Great XML to figure out what actually matters.
It requires an immense amount of discipline from defense teams to stay focused. But looking at all of this raises an important question, something for you to consider as you look at your own vendor relationships today.
Ooh, where are you going with this?
Well, we talked about the gentleman utilizing highly responsive development cycles.
Right.
They released a patch for their ransomware on the exact same day a decryptor was published by researchers.
The same day patch.
Yeah. They have dedicated technical support channels for their affiliates. They are constantly updating their FUM build. Bring your own vulnerable driver tools to ensure they can kill the latest EDR updates.
The aggressive startup mentality we talked about.
So think about this. If ransomware cartels are operating with this level of agility, QA testing, and customer service for their criminal affiliates, how long until these underground groups start offering more reliable tech support and faster software updates than the legitimate enterprise vendors they are exploiting?
Oh, wow.
When the criminal developers are actively patching their malware faster than the good guys are patching their enterprise software, the fundamental economics of network defense have to radically shift.
That is a chilling thought to end on. When the dark web incubator operates smoother and faster than the enterprise vendor, we're in for a very bumpy ride.
We really are.
Well, we hope this deep dive helped clear the noise off your radar today, giving you the context you need to focus on the blinking lights that actually matter. Thank you for joining us for this Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing. Stay curious and stay secure.